Want to expand the reach of your content? Start a podcast. Feature industry experts on your show and leverage the influence and reach of your guests to grow your brand. Learn more at sweetfishmedia.com.
You're listening to B2B Growth, a daily podcast for B2B leaders. We've interviewed names you've probably heard before, like Gary Vaynerchuk and Simon Sinek, but you've probably never heard from the majority of our guests. That's because the bulk of our interviews aren't with professional speakers and authors. Most of our guests are in the trenches leading sales and marketing teams. They're implementing strategy. They're experimenting with tactics. They're building the fastest growing B2B companies in the world. My name is James Carberry. I'm the founder of Sweetfish Media, a podcast agency for B2B brands. And I'm also one of the co-hosts of this show. When we're not interviewing sales and marketing leaders, you'll hear stories from behind the scenes of our own business. We'll share the ups and downs of our journey as we attempt to take over the world. Just kidding. Well, maybe. Let's get into the show.
Welcome back to B2B Growth. I am your host for today's episode, Nikki Ivey with Sweetfish Media. I've got with me today Steve Schubert, co-founder and partner at New Bridge Marketing Group. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's not as sunny as I typically like it to be here in Austin, Texas, but you know, I make the sunshine myself and keep it moving. And so Steve, you're going to be talking to us today about experiential marketing and some ROI insights and practical examples, which I'm super excited to hear from you. But before we get into that, I would love to hear you give us just a little bit of background on yourself and what you and the folks at New Bridge Marketing have been up to these days.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks for the chance and thanks for taking the time to chat today. In New Bridge Marketing Group, we founded the company 14 years ago. At the time, we were consultants who previously had worked in the consumer packaged goods space. We had worked at Procter & Gamble. As we were helping brands get to college students, we realized it was a really fragmented space and difficult to get to. So the roots of our company are actually in college marketing. We started doing college marketing to help consolidate that fragmented market. And as we did that, naturally, we saw a really good consumer response to experiential. So we were doing different sorts of media. We still do a lot of college media today. But in particular, the growth area that we were really seeing in across the college audience was a really positive reaction to experiential. So we started going beyond just hosting to get much more upstream into the creative side of experiential. That led us to where we are today, a full-fledged brand experience agency that does anything an experiential, from the little sorts of brand ambassador types of executions to big special events that we design and create, to mobile tours and mobile selling tours and long-term ambassador programs on college campuses. So we tend to have a youth bent to us. Some of the work we do, though, has nothing to do with youth because people in general enjoy good experiences. That's what we do in a nutshell, but we'd love to chat with you more about it.
Yeah. I took a look at some of the things that you guys have been into. I saw a really cool partnership with L.L. Bean. I saw some of the student ambassador stuff you're talking about with Razor and Kombucha. I'm just name dropping. But to your point, yes, I saw a lot of the cool things that you guys are doing out there. And they were a little bit youth slanted. But like you said, what we're really talking about here is what the hearts and minds of people in general respond to. So talk a little bit about, just to start, what some of the market trends are when it comes to this tailwind of experiential marketing.
Yeah, I guess from the ground level, as we were doing our work, you know, going back about probably 8 or 9 years, we saw clearly that from the digital perspective, things were changing drastically in our sort of business. That's a headwind in one aspect and a tailwind in another. With the digital media work that we do to college students, it's an obvious headwind. You know, margins compress. Consumers get so many impressions fed to them each day. So that's obviously a challenging business from some aspects. On the flip side, when you look at experiential, it's a wonderful tailwind because brands used to have to invest a lot of money to have a one-to-one experience. And it's hard to justify that unless it's an incredible experience making a big, big impact on a consumer who has an awful lot of friends they're going to go chat with. And in today's world, that's obviously very different. In today's world, they can tell many, many people instantly. And the more that we really smartly build these programs so that it's a natural desire of consumers when they have the experience to want to tell others about it and not some sort of forced marketing, I need to do this to get this sort of prize kind of thing.
Yeah.
The more that you do that, the more that they'll naturally want to tell people, and the more that telling to people is perceived well by others. And then there's a second level action taken by those who comment, like, and share with others as well.
Yeah. And that's something we also talked about offline, is some of those obvious growth drivers when it comes to experiential marketing. Any examples of where you've seen that particularly blow up or go well?
Yeah, for sure. I think that just when I look at, I guess a gaming tour would be a good example. We've done some really fun national gaming tours with Razer Gaming. Actually, we work with two Razers. We work with Razer Scooters as well. But Razer Gaming, we've done very fun national tours with them, where as you create certain sort of engagement and smart pricing, but also have an understanding of who is it that's on the site when you're interacting. There's a way to get really good leverage yourself, not just from those who are sending the message out, who are having the experience sending the message out and engaging throughout the entire experience, because we're incentivizing people to go through every step of the experience. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, having that follow-up that is a customized fit to different individuals that came through the experience, it's a really important aspect of it. So it's not just getting the extra viral bang from that particular step, or benefit from that particular step, but mm-hmm. The follow-up as well. I think a totally different example, though, would be L.L. Bean, too. Like you mentioned, we do a lot with L.L. Bean. They're a wonderful partner of ours. They do so many great things to help people get outdoors. And the work that we do with them, there's lots of different examples we could use, but if I take maybe one of the bigger examples, it would be Northern Lights. We create this Northern Lights experience, this very big, but special and intimate at the same time holiday experience.
Yeah.
For people that go up to their headquarter campus from late November through early January, over 500,000 people come through it each year. But as we do that, those sort of special family moments that you can create, where the children are seeing live reindeer, they're seeing a village recreated and with a neat little train set of Santa's in a custom built woodworked beautiful barn. They go through this maze-like 650 spruce tree sort of experience, but you find people just stopping to capture the moment and sharing it with others, telling others to come, you got to check this out. Those sorts of things that are just, they either, in this case, it entertains, I would say. So if you're either really informing, really entertaining, or providing some sort of super special value that people want to share, usually it's one of those three components, if not maybe a charitable component as well would obviously be another one. So maybe those four components are typical experiential drivers for buzz.
Yeah. And that's what I was really blown away by when I took a look at that campaign. There's a gentleman I follow, Rich Antonello of Complex Media, and he was talking about this concept of going beyond a lot of the traditional ways that we measure the success of marketing when it comes to just how many eyes you get on you and how many likes and all this, sort of the old guard, and this idea of how well you can activate your audience, how well you can bring folks like you're talking about into the experience. And so that's sort of what you're hitting on, right? Some of the valuable byproducts that go beyond buzz. Talk a little bit more about that for us.
Yeah, for sure. Because a lot of people will, you'll see the metrics for a typical experiential program, and people will refer to awareness and things like that. And those are all nice, but getting that secondhand action, but then other things too. When you do really good creative and design around experiential, it depends on the kind of program, but you can get good creative itself coming out of them. We run long-term student ambassador programs as an example. We run them for brands like Biore Skincare, Razer Scooters. We run one for L.L. Bean. We run one for Brew Doctor Kombucha, a good partner of ours here in Portland. But as we run those on campuses around the country in these long-term programs, the creative that comes out of those, user-generated creative that is really high quality, can be a wonderful byproduct from an ROI perspective for brands with experiential. And to get that good creative, it requires obviously very smart recruiting, getting ambassadors that have shown that they don't just have a big following, but they also have a real design eye, and that they passionately, genuinely care about that particular product. If they like the brand, or if they love the brand, I should say, if they love the brand and want to go tell others about it, but also have that creativity to go capture special moments, capture unique angles, you'll see that creative that they generate start to show up on the national social feeds of your brand partners, on their websites. And that's a real added value for those brands. They didn't invest in the program necessarily to get that creative, but when that starts coming, to them. And it's a wonderful benefit for them. Research is another one. So when you look at the consumer research that can come from this, if you've got ambassadors that are passionate about a brand, you can get their perspective as well as really smartly weave in consumer research as people come through, whether it's the classic sorts of testing, taste testing one product versus another, or tasting and getting different sorts of benefits. But you can also elicit with a smartly crafted research approach, you can elicit forward-thinking new creative ideas from people as well that you can take back to the brand team to help the brand evolve. And then a third might be recruiting. When I think about programs that we've had brand partners that actually happen this week again, but brand partners say, we absolutely love this ambassador so much. We want this ambassador to work for us. Is that okay? And for some reason, I guess we're just a little different. And there must be some other agencies like us that do this, but we love it. I know some agencies don't, and some agencies have no competes out there for brands not to take their ambassadors that they bring into a program to as full-time employees. But for us, if you're a brand partner of ours and we bring a attracted ambassador who loves your brand and you want to hire, that's wonderful. So there's different benefits like that can really come from experiential as well.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like in that case, it would just be such a testament to how you guys got that recruiting piece right. And then it would feed itself, right, when it comes to recruiting more folks. I mean, if they're hearing, hey, this person that was a brand ambassador for us went on to be, picked up as a to join this team for these folks that we were partnered with, it seems like it'd make even more quality folks want to be a part of what you guys are doing. So it's really cool thing for you to talk about. Another thing that I'd be interested in, we've sort of talked about what the trends are and what some of the drivers and the byproducts are of this experiential marketing. What's the future look like? What are some of the ways that this thing is going to grow and expand moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, the data is encouraging. We see it on the ground and it makes sense to us because we see it every day. But the data that we see is encouraging. There was a study in 2017 that showed that 36% of companies, this is from Bizibo, 36% of companies had allocated over 20% of their marketing budgets towards event marketing. So I like to call it experiential overall. But 36% in 2017, that number went up to a little bit over 50% in 2018. There's been studies by McKinsey had a great study which spoke to, of course, word of mouth is very important and it's a primary factor. In their study, it showed a primary factor in a bit over 20% of purchase decisions. But experiential within that subset of word of mouth accounted for a little bit over half of the word of the activity. So between 50 and 80%, depending on the category. There's real reason when you think about McKinsey's study, there's real reason for experiential to grow. And you see it in the data when you look at the increasingly larger percentage of the marketing pie that's being allocated to it. And it speaks to what we were talking about before too, with social media helping to justify that expense because so much more people get to see it. As far as growth areas, what are things that are coming in the future? One thing in particular that we see, and we love this, I'm very biased from my time at Procter & Gamble. I spent a lot of time on category management work and retail strategy. I worked a lot with partners across the supply chain. Mm-hmm. And as I did that, there's even more, this is going to sound like a really simple thing to say, but it's some of the simplest things I think sometimes you don't see them coming to fruition in the market so often. But the more you can incentivize a manufacturer with a retail benefit as part of your marketing program, the better. It can be challenging to bring multiple parties together in a program, but I'll take a specific example, food truck tours. We love to run food truck tours. We're actually kicking one off this week in New York City for Brew Doctor. It's a beverage truck tour. Mm-hmm. But we love these tours and we love them not just because, sure, people love to see food trucks and get samples and things like that. They're fun. You can create great engagement around them. We love them for all those reasons. But from a business perspective, there's so much more of a benefit that can come from these tours that is really, I'd say, untapped. It's slightly tapped maybe in some cases, but there's so much more that can be done to consistently get retail leverage for manufacturers out of these tours. And very specifically, so we've run tours. We did one with Hillshire Farm and Kroger, one with Kodiak Cakes and Safeway. And the Brew Doctor one's going to be really fun in New York. If you're not familiar with Brew Doctor, it's a fantastic kombucha brand. It's for many, many reasons, one that I love and I literally drink every day. So I'm passionately a fan of it myself. But when you look at a program like that, if you can take a tour and you can go for a brand that has really valuable consumers, if you can get out to the market where those consumers are hanging out. That's something the brand wants to do anyway. They want to engage with their high value consumers right. where they're hanging out and having fun. You get out there and engage with them. But when you think about it from a retail perspective, the retailer especially wants these brands that have high value consumers to come to their retail location. So if you can add that extra retail integration into the engagement that you have out in market, it's incredibly valuable for retailers. And if you're a manufacturer, it's so much easier to justify that investment if you're going to get that retail benefit. So it's kind of like, I guess just one little analogy I can give would be similar to like the Target car. When I think back to the Target car in NASCAR, you know, if you think about these sorts of cars that have all the different manufacturer stickers all over them, there's an obvious reason why those manufacturers are supporting, or not stickers, stickers at that speed, stickers would fly off, but these decals. So but when you look at the other brands that are on these cars, they're there for an obvious reason when it's Target. Target has an incredible amount of shelf space around the country. And if you're supporting that program as a manufacturer, you're probably getting some benefit on shelf. But in a similar way with the super creative types of things that are happening today with things like food and beverage truck tours, such a benefit if you can wisely integrate it and lead your valuable consumer that the retailer covets to the retail location, then you can start looking at getting a complete line of your product, get better shelf space, new distribution at certain retailers if you need to win that new key account, and bring that in as a carrot to your sales discussion. So it's really not just a sales discussion, but a strategic category type of discussion. Those sorts of things, that's one example, I think, of a future growth area that just has so many legs to it that you can go in so many, it doesn't have to be just a food and beverage truck, but getting that synergy between manufacturer and retailer, there's so much opportunity there.
So much of what you said are things that resonate with me. I mean, like, look, anytime you can talk about marketers having a strategy / sales / ROI conversation, I'm excited for that because it feeds into this whole alignment between marketing and sales. And then you sort of talked a little bit about some of the ways that, you know, things that we've seen working in B2C spilling over into B2B and everyone benefiting from it. Not the least of which the consumer. And then also you talked about food trucks. And I live in Austin, Texas, and we're nothing if not a food truck town. And in a lot of ways, a kombucha town. So preaching to the choir there. Steve, this has been a lot of really, really valuable information you've given us about experiential marketing and ROI insights. And so I've been able to sort of pick your brain and get a lot out of it. What I'm interested in now is what you're putting into it. Steve, what are some of the learning resources, be it, you know, books you're reading, blog, podcasts you're listening to that you're excited about or that have sort of informed your approach?
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm going to have the best answer for you here when I think about it. It's a great question. My best source, I mean, I have a number of different sources I get, you know, just, and we all get so many different emails from different groups. Mm-hmm. I like to tune into a lot of the standard publications and things like that. But honestly, I like to spend a lot of time on the ground networking with individuals. I found that, and also going out to see other experiential and sharing that experiential within our team, because there's obviously a lot of great stuff that's happening out there and a lot of great insights. So I like to observe what others are doing. I like to, you know, naturally, I mean, we share, and I guess this is probably a good example. I think that might be a little bit different, but we like to get out to conferences that are not the typical, you know, we do a lot of youth marketing. We tend not to go to youth marketing conferences. Hmm. We tend to go to conferences in other verticals. We like to go places where other people are, you know, talking about what's important to them and in places where you get a chance to go engage with senior marketing people who are really there to collaborate. Not the kind of place where you're just one of a number of agencies looking to pitch over folks. We often get inspired when we're there. It sort of happens organically that you learn a lot about what's going on, you know, in different verticals. And it becomes sort of the fun intellectual challenge, I think, at that point, because you're reapplying what you've learned in other places. You know, it kind of crosses over there. So it's probably not the for you about the latest book or website necessarily.
I think it's a great answer. I haven't gotten that answer yet. And I'm not one to judge anybody's learning resources. I don't know if you can see it. I've got a bookshelf behind me and there is the entire Twilight series. So I am in no position to be like, oh, that's where you read. That's the type of thing you read. Anyway, like I said, this has been really great. do you have a note on the Twilight?
I was going to say, I'll make one little comment. I am actually reading Frenemies right now.
Yes.
about about the epic disruption of the ad business. So like that sort of stuff is fun as well. Because, yeah. And I think too, I guess I'll say in saying that, it's fun to take a bit of a cynical eye on the ad agency, you know, mm-hmm. or the agency mm-hmm. business overall. So, I mean, we're in the agency business. You know, you hear certain people have certain opinions about relationships between brands and agencies. I spent a lot of time on the brand side, and I will say that we're a little old school that way, that I do think that book in particular, Frenemies, when you think about it, and most folks are familiar with that book or familiar with the disruption, certainly in the industry recently, that it's fun to look at it. In my opinion, we deliberately choose to play a more traditional role. We do think that we can, as an agency, provide free consultative advice to partners because we're just good partners. And I think it's helpful to read a book like that to just understand like the lack of transparency and what lack of transparency can lead to, and then choose your path. In our case, we choose the path of deliberate transparency. We'll let all partners know, here's how much we make on this particular program to the bottom line and all these other costs. We just, we break things out with a lot more clarity. So that is one particular better answer.
I love it. I love it. So perfect. Steve, thanks so much. How can folks connect with you?
You can reach me. Email is always good. You can find our company at newbridgemg.com. That's Newbridge, as in we build bridges between folks. But Newbridge MG as in marketing group as well. But my email address is steve@newbridgemg.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to connecting with you and following along with all the cool things that you guys do. And hopefully having you on again in the future. This has been great. Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun chatting. I appreciate it.
We totally get it. We publish a ton of content on this podcast, and it can be a lot to keep up with. That's why we've started the B2B Growth Big Three, a no-fluff email that boils down our three biggest takeaways from an entire week of episodes. Sign up today at sweetfishmedia.com/big3. That's sweetfishmedia.com/big3.